This episode of Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor is brought to you by the awesome people over at Apex Entertainment. Apex, located in Marlboro, is located right off Route 495 on Route 20. It's 100,000 square feet of pure fun for all ages. There's always perfect weather at Apex Entertainment, and it's an ideal location for a birthday party, corporate outing, or special event. Or, you know what, just to go and have some fun. Attractions include 30 bowling lanes, multi-level indoor go-kart track, laser tag, bumper cars, rope course, and arcade. Go check out apexentertainment.com. Razor and I thanks Apex Entertainment for all of their support. Well, originally this was going to be just after the Bruins-Ottawa game, and it was going to be this same group that we have assembled for Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. But this time, because the hockey world has kind of stopped again, as we welcome you into another Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor, we are not going to do it post-game, but we're going to do it, I guess, what should have been in-game. And we are bringing in the heavy hitter, the heavy. That is right. We have added one of the heaviest of them all, and I don't mean literally, I mean figuratively, Andy Brickley joining us from Nesson and former Boston Bruin, and joining us because, holy shit, none of us have anything to do right now, except I understand that Brick and Razor may have a little more shopping to do. Again, as we welcome you, Brick, I'm going to tell you something. For those who don't get to see us visually on YouTube, the guest room slash office, whatever that is, looks spectacular. Great to have you join us.
Thank you. Yes. So, well, we're very much in the spirit here in the Brickley household. We love Christmas holiday, and it's nice to have family around. In fact, just before we started our conversation, I'm coming home from being on the North Shore, where I've had family that lives out of town in town. So I'm really in the that family atmosphere and the Christmas spirit. So good to be with you guys.
And Razor, it's awesome to see you've decorated the Peloton behind you too. I thought that was a red thumb. That's actually the stop button on the bike back there. Not sure how much you've been getting on the Peloton, but as always, wonderful to see you in your spot. Fellas, holy smokes. The world of the Boston Bruins has paused again. It was announced, what was it, yesterday or the day before, I guess, that all games would be paused through December 26th, meaning the next game we may, emphasis on may, see the Bruins is on the 27th in a game against, was it Pittsburgh? I'm even forgetting right now. It was supposed to be, I think it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Game. All right, yep. So, you know, guys, I'll throw it out to both of you. I'll start with you, Razor. How different does this feel from, we're working on almost 2 years ago from when the world really did stop, so to speak, not just for the NHL, but for everybody else? Does it have any type of a similar feel to it? What's your take right now as the Bruins go on their pause?
Well, I would say that hindsight tells me that it's not the same. We're not in the, where everything's going to be completely closed and we're not going to see the rest of this season, which ended up happening, March of 2020. But the similarity is the little bit of unknown that we have right now is similar to that unknown feeling. But we know so much more about the variants, and we know so much more about vaccines, and the league seems much more intent to continue to play as well at this point. So the unknown is probably very, very similar, but I think what the next few months looks like isn't necessarily what happened in March.
Brick, how about you? I'm going to guess you weren't shocked. Were you upset? Were you disappointed? What were you when you heard the other day the announcement the Bruins were shutting down?
Yeah, I was all of those emotions, to be honest with you. I think frustrated probably at the top of the list. What I do agree with Razor is that I think that league, and even though the information is changing every 15 minutes as we learn more and more and more about these variants, is that they're far more prepared for what's in front of them based on what they were able to accomplish over the last 2 years. The fact that they had NHL Stanley Cup playoffs 2 years in a row, and that they were able to do it, even though it was in a bubble, even though it was really challenging and restrictive for the players and everybody involved in every facet of the organization, and the sacrifices that these people made in order to get this sport to be, you know, get to that ultimate prize, which is what all the fans were hoping to get, no matter what it looked like. I think we're far more prepared for that, even though I'd like to believe that this Omicron variant is highly transmissible, but far less, you know, mild. And I think in the long run, that could be really good for what's going on right now. And even though we're in a pause, certain teams are in a pause, I'm hopeful that the league will continue to fight the good fight and not go into a league-wide pause, and hope that that is the right decision. And I think they're prepared, and I think they have quality people and educated people and insightful people that can handle this situation and allow this league to do the right things, and keeping in mind the safety of the players first and foremost. So the frustration's there, but it's tempered because I believe that good things are going to happen, even though we're suffering right now.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with both of you. I think that, listen, nobody knows. There's no playbook for this. I think we all would love one. And, you know, we talked about it in Bruins shootout. What was it, on Tuesday night, I believe, about we'd love more information. You brought that up. We all talked about that, Brick, how we'd love more information. I don't know if they have the information. I think that's the probably the scariest thing for them and for even medical experts, but also just for people in general, not knowing. I mean, I'm a type A. I fully admit it. You know, but I want to know as much as possible. I just wonder if they just don't know. And it's not that when I say they're making it up as they go along, I just think they're trying to react as they go along as best as possible, because they're like, holy shit, we don't know where this thing is going.
Yeah, and it's disturbing too, because if you just focus on, you know, what we focus on, the three of us, and that's the Boston Bruins and their season and the organization and the team, it's frustrating because, you know, the team isn't playing up to their capabilities right now, and there's a number of variables for that, but that's the facts. You know, this is a league of wins and losses and points, and are you going to be a playoff team, and can you compete for the Stanley Cup? But they have serious challenges and serious issues right now. Maybe the biggest is the fact that their practice facility is shut down. What are these guys going to be doing between now and potentially December 27th so that they're ready to get back right into the, you know, National Hockey League competition and make sure that they can bank some points?
Brick, you need another training camp back in the day if you guys had 9 days off at Christmas, right. Your group, another month.
3 days, Razor, would need training.
Oh, it's going to be, I mean, it's kind of a nice Christmas for everybody, Christmas holiday. They don't get this much time with family around. It's certainly not in an ideal circumstance, but to take another positive out of for those guys, it is kind of nice to be around the kids and the family that much more.
Yeah, and they have to do it locally, correct?
I believe so.
Is travel allowed for these guys?
Unless they can get in the minivan and drive out to upstate New York or something like that, I would suppose. I don't think they want anyone getting on a commercial flight.
Right. I mean, because some of the protocols that they've had to reinstitute based on what they were doing, you know, the restrictions over the last 2 years, they're back in play.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's the old thing. You can do it. And if you can get away with it, you're okay. But God forbid something happened and it found out that you were away, you know what I mean, or somehow you snuck into the facility, which is a hard thing. That's an extreme thing. It wouldn't go over well. Let's just say that it wouldn't go over well. And there are protocols. And by the way, it's a worthy reminder here, fellas, that it's not just Boston. In no particular order, I've got Calgary, Florida, Colorado, Nashville, Toronto recently, Detroit just earlier today. Am I missing somebody? I'm not sure.
I think Vancouver had a reschedule.
Vancouver too. I was going to
Vancouver. Okay. Vancouver.
Yeah, and the most recent announcement too is you know, any of these games between now and what, December 23rd, there's no border crossing, so you're already canceling or not canceling, postponing more games.
Yeah, they don't want, it came down to, besides Canadian government treating it, in fact, a little differently than U.S. government, they don't want anybody stuck cross-border, too, come play, come holiday time. You know, not you can get play, it's great, you get the game in, but not, it's not a good visual to have teams stuck across borders and not be able to get home for their families.
No, not ideal. Only, I guess the island, like the Islanders, Montreal are playing tomorrow or Tuesday, and they've said that if something happens, Montreal can drive their guys home, get private transportation, and they can drive back across the border with no issues. So that was the one caveat with them coming to the United States, the Canadian teams.
All right. Well, listen, we talked again during Face-Off the other day, Brick, about I wasn't leaning towards a shutdown or a pause for the league, but then I was, meaning like, oh, we may have to. The problem is I thought about it more, and this is like no earth-shattering commentary here, but how the hell do we know that this thing 10 days from now, right, 2 weeks from now, isn't going to be worse? I happen to think it's actually going to be the Omicron variant is if it is true to form and we follow Europe and then Canada and everything, it's probably going to be more significant in a few weeks, more impactful here.
Well, unless, and this is the big one, is if the NHL follows NFL protocol, which they're putting down on Sunday or Monday, where vaccinated players that don't have symptoms don't have to test. And that, if they do that, then the league is up and running instantly, because I know one of those teams that you mentioned, I talked to a player on that team, all nine of their guys would play in a minute. None of them are sick. None of them have any symptoms. None of them have anything. And they're all vaccinated. So if you take on the NFL protocols that possibly everybody was waiting for one of the leagues, and the NFL is the biggest and baddest to do that, then like Steve Yzerman talked about in his interview on Saturday evening, the league could be up and running a lot quicker than what we think.
Yeah, and my understanding too, Razor, as far as the NFL protocol goes, yeah, double vax, triple vax, however you want to describe it, and you're asymptomatic. You're not even testing.
That's right.
So there's no question you're going to play because there's no negative test to deal with.
It will be interesting to see. My guess is over the holidays, or perhaps before the holidays, that there will be significant talks. We know that, I guess, between the PA and the NHL, including in that, the NHL's foray to the Olympics. Will they stay or will they go?
And I, you know, just to jump in, I don't know. Like, I think it's important to recognize the players are really pissed about this.
Which part?
That they're not playing right now. That they're all healthy, and they can't play hockey right now. And they're sitting at home, and they've played with fevers. They've played with foot and mouth disease. They've played with 105 fevers. And they can't play these games now. Like, the players are legitimately upset about this. And there might be some guys that are a little leery, but the majority of these guys want to play.
Oh, okay. And all those things are communicable diseases. You know, they're transmissible.
I guess that's
my question. And I don't know jack shit about, meaning I have a hard enough time being a broadcaster, let alone an epidemiologist pretending to be one. So. The question to throw out there is, well, I get it that guys aren't sick, and I get it that they want to play, and I respect all that, but how, I guess, you each have kids. I've got kids, so somebody's out there playing, and then it gets transmitted, and God forbid somebody in my family gets it and gets it significantly. Is it worth it? I'm asking that rhetorically. Is it worth it, or is it something that we just have to say, and this is really more than a hockey question, Brick and Razor, that we just have to, we're at that point now, we've just got to move on from it. Is that what we're willing to do for the NHL to get games in? I guess that's what it comes down to.
Well, you know, my opinion is that, if you're vaccinated, and again, along with the booster, and you're abiding by all protocols, certainly I agree with Razor saying the players want to play. I get that. Mm-hmm. The children aspect of it, fellas, my children are grown. You know, they're 30, they're 25 years old. They're adults. They make their own decisions on, you know, what risks they're willing to take. My question, if the players want to play, I'm concerned about the business of hockey if they decide that they are going to play games. I mean, what league has rules where you can have 100% capacity, 50% capacity, and 0% capacity? right? And isn't that all part of the HRR? I mean, it's still a gate-dependent league, right?
Yep.
And these are the things you also have to consider. It's not just the player's want and desire. It's really what is the league and what's best for the business of hockey as part of that decision-making process.
Well, and as you know, Brett, I'm sure a lot of that business part of it is going into a player's decision because they're more than – they can recognize that when these buildings are empty or they're not playing, that the escrow number's going up and it's 50-50. They're not getting that guaranteed salary like the baseball guys. And this is – they're the hands going right into their pocket. And they all have short careers, and that's certainly an element of it. Again, to the point of – and – I, like you said, Billy, I have no idea. I wouldn't be the ones making this decisions. Far from a doctor, but I'm from the player's point of view. When they're sitting at home losing money, and they're healthy in their hockey terms.
Well, I'm going to try. I'm going to try and find the positive, which is, I hate that word now because we talk about a bad thing being a positive too now in a test, right? I mean, because it ain't a positive to me, fellas, when a test comes back with bad news. I'd call it a bad result. How about that instead of a positive bad result? But maybe, just maybe, some of these pauses in the season will allow us somehow some way to get through it. I don't think any of us sitting here and talking here on Morning Brew, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just going to guess. Tell me if I'm wrong. Thought we'd get through this season unscathed. I didn't. That I never thought. I thought for sure that we would see pauses somewhere. Now, I didn't think it would be like this, though, but I thought we would. I didn't think we would get through April 29th for the Bruins or whatever it was to be done. But anyway, I'm just hoping it gets us through the full 82. And if it means we have to go into end of June again, then we do. That's what I'm hoping is the end result.
Yeah, I'm with you, Billy. I thought there would definitely be some challenges this year in terms of COVID and what it meant to, you know, the fluidity of the National Hockey League. Were there going to be some COVID positive tests? Yes, absolutely. Did I think it would be pandemic measure, a pandemic, you know, the way we're dealing with it? Did I think we were going to revert all the way back to a bubble situation? Did I think we were going to go back to, you know, mandatory lockdown when you're traveling and social distancing? All those words that we hated for the last 18 months to 2 years, and it's headed back in that direction. And that's what concerns everybody. And that's why the league, and I actually liked what I saw, you know, earlier today in terms of some transparency as to what the plan was moving forward. It didn't have a ton of detail, but at least there was a plan and some awareness for those of us that needed some questions answered in order to be able to discuss what's going on with the league. So all that being said, yeah, I'm with you. I didn't think it would take these many steps backwards and that would face these tremendous challenges and question whether you could get a full season in, let alone a Stanley Cup playoff, let alone everything that we came to hate over the last 18 months for what this sport's dealing with.
Well, let's touch on the Bruins in particular. It's not a halfway, you know, through the season synopsis or analysis, because we're not there just yet. But having Brick on here, Razor, and we've talked, you know, regularly about the team and everything, get another perspective from him too. And just let's deep dive into some things that I think, though, we have seen enough games already now to make some decisions on. The Bruins lose their last two games before this pause. Vegas, I don't want to say it was a scheduled loss, but it wasn't going to be an easy game regardless, right? Fair enough. We all agree on that. Okay, fine. The Islander game, despite the demise of the team and the uncertainty, and Razor and I have talked about the hardships or the difficulties of playing, you know, when your mind isn't clear as a player, I don't care what level you play at, it's not easy out there. I can't imagine what they were going through, et cetera. But overall, I'll start with you, Brick, since you're the guest. Give me a grade, either A through F or a 1 through 5 on what you see with this team so far. And I know it's easy to say incomplete. I always like to take that way out. But through these games so far, this a little bit more than quarter way through the season, how would you grade this Bruins team?
Well, you have to start with what were your expectations for this team coming into the season, and so you know the goal for
what were
me.
Your expectations?
Yeah, so the goal for me was I wanted this Bruins team to be a top three in the division. You know, I didn't think they were number one. I didn't think they were number two. I thought they had a fair chance to be the third seed in this division to guarantee themselves a playoff spot. So based on that, I can't give them an A. I can't give them a B. I'll give them a C because it is slightly incomplete, but it's been winnable games that they've lost. And that's a big concern for me because you're going to play better teams and you're going to lose your share of games to those better teams. For the most part, they were beating the teams they were supposed to beat, you know, through the first 2 months of the season, but it hasn't been that way lately. So that brings the grade down. I think they're middling. I think they're a C. There's room for improvement. And I think they need to really figure out, now that we're at this point in the season, that is this the team that we believe in that can get us into that top three and guarantee us a playoff spot? If not, you got to start really considering, you already have one player asking for a trade, but they got to really start considering about personnel and what works best, because if it's not here and it's not in Providence, obviously it's somewhere else and you got to go get it.
Razor, can this team strive or reach, as they are constructed right now, using Brick's C grade level, do you think that they can achieve, I'm not going to say greatness, because I don't think they're a cup contending team right now. I don't, as constructed, but can they achieve goodness, good enoughness? And is good enough, by the way, I'll ask both of you this, acceptable, not just, forget the market of Boston, which is an amazing sports city, but is it acceptable for the Boston Bruins?
Well, I don't believe all the way to the top that it's acceptable just to get in a playoff position. I think they have much loftier expectations for this organization, and I think the money they spent in the summer would indicate that. I think the C grade is right where I would put it, and I would say that my issue is a few of the lesser, the guys a little bit further down the lineup not stepping up the same way or the way that I thought. And a guy like, you know, we had so much hope for Jack Studnicka, a guy like that, those younger guys that you hear about in training camp. And we talked about it, that not all of them were going to make it, not all of them were going to shine. But I know Brick and I were on the show in the summer, you know, talking about there hasn't been one of those guys that really took over. And Bleed's been pretty good at times, but then he gets injured right away. There hasn't been a breakthrough player on the Bruins.
Well, hold on. Can I? You're right. You know, games. Zabor will maybe be the one, but yet he's injured now as well.
He's not playing. Yeah.
He's not playing. I'm with you. No, I know what you're saying. I don't disagree. But Zabor,
that's a good name. Yeah, that's a good name.
He opened my eyes. I give the kid credit because I was not nearly as high on him as I was before he got injured.
But if you want to go even further back, fellas, you know, as far as we're talking about, you know, young players developing into that next wave of Boston Bruin talent that are going to continue this nice long run of competitiveness and try to crack and be into the, you know, the elite teams and be one of the elite teams year in and year out. It's all about passing the torch. And over the last several years, that core group that really made this team special for about a decade, you know, you've started to lose pieces, right? You lost Chara, you know, for a variety of reasons. We don't need to rehash that. David Krejci, a huge loss. And we can peel that onion a little bit more, too, as to what's wrong with this Bruins team. I'd put Tuukka in that mix this year. And I'd put Torey Krug in there on the periphery when he left because he was really important in terms of how you wanted to play the game with the personnel you had, power play, etc. So where's that next wave of talent, you know? Was it supposed to be Jake DeBrusk? Was it Danton Heinen? Was it Ryan Donato? Was it Anders Bjork? Was it Zach Zanishin? You know, was it Zaboral on the back end? You know, where is that next wave? You mentioned Jack Studnicka. Yeah, that's current, Razor, right? Current. Mm-hmm. But it's been a consistency of what's missing with this team as you continue to lean on the top three or four players.
So we've got two special players we know in Bergeron and Marchand. Amazing. All-world players. One Hall of Famer. The other, I think, still working his way. But I think if he continues at the trajectory he has, I think 63 has a legitimate chance. Now, let's not get too far ahead of Billiness over here, but you know what I mean. He's got, I think he's got the potential at least. But the other guy with them that everybody wants to succeed so much, in David Pastrnak, has struggled this year. He's had a few games where you're like, that's the guy. That is pasta. Pasta is sizzling or boiling, if I want to use a bad cliche. You know what I mean? And he hasn't. And we all know that he struggled to begin the year. And none of us, Razor and I, Brick, have talked about, we can't fathom what he went through. We understand right. that from an emotional perspective. But from a physical dimension on the ice, he's missing the net. He was leading the league in misses. Now Ovechkin is, if only because Ovechkin shoots, you know, a ton too. He's had some tough luck. He leads the league in posts. He literally does in posts and crossbar. But I'll ask you, again, Brick, I'll just go to you on this as the guest. Are you concerned about what you're seeing or not seeing from David Pastrnak?
Of course. You know, and it speaks to the Bruins' record. You know, there are games where, you know, I said earlier that were very winnable. I mean, he had a stretch of games where he might have had at least one 2-on-1, you know, and sometimes multiple 2-on-1s. You know, yep. He and Marchand and Pasta, you know, Bergeron, and when Pasta had the puck, there was like a drag to his decision-making. You know, he just wasn't playing the game. He wasn't just playing reactionary hockey. He wasn't playing with that swagger and confidence and belief in his own abilities. And look, all players, no matter how great they are, it's the rare exception that doesn't play the game without confidence at some point. And that's what he looks like. You know, when there's hesitation or he's trying to be too fine or he's hurrying a shot or he's picking his head up, you know, like to use a golf term, you know, when he's trying to one time it and he completely whiffs on it. You know, we've seen way too much of that from this kid because he's too talented. He's too good. He's too good of a goal scorer to have that kind of element in his game at all. And I can't put my finger on the reason as to why. One of the things we get hurt by, you know, what we do for a living is we don't have close proximity to these guys over the last 2 years. We can't have a subtle conversation away from the rink if we were so, you know, fortunate to have that might be able to give us a little insight or maybe even a little tidbit from a coach or a teammate that might shed some light on what he's dealing with. I have no idea, but it's not David Pastrnak. He's not the player that the Bruins need him to be.
Razor, former goalie that you are, has Pasta, and I know we touched this in the past, but now, again, we're at 26 games. We see him a lot. Is he becoming too predictable in your eyes from a goaltender's perspective?
I don't believe so because he was playing a pretty predictable game already, but he was just blowing it past all the goalies. It's very similar to Ovi where he's predictable, but you can't stop it. And to Brick's point, that's the talent David has. And I've said it here. I've said it on Nest. There's three guys that beat goalies on a regular basis with their shot. It's Ovechkin, it's Matthews, and it's David Pastrnak. And you can throw Stamkos in this year because he's back to hammering again. But it's different when these guys shoot on you. There's guys in the National Hockey League that score goals because they know where to go. They're smart. Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid. But then there's guys that just beat you because you can't stop them. And that's an Ovechkin, that's a Pastrnak. And that's why I wouldn't say that he's become predictable. There's something else because he should be able to score 8 goals in this league in 5 games. It really should be that easy for him. And I've seen it be that easy for him. Just think about that down the right wing over Carey Price's shoulder with a slapper from 45 feet away. You haven't seen that. That's gone away.
And look at the Islander game. Look at the Islander game when he goes down the gut, he goes down the slot area after he gets a turnover, and he tries to go backhand and go 5-hole. And meanwhile, Varlamov, we talked about it on the show post, he actually overreacted or was late or whatever.
He was late. He just bought it. He was beat, cold beat, and David just puts it back into him. So I'm not concerned about the predictability. I just want him to hit it harder like he has before.
Yeah, if I could add to that, fella. And by the way, that was a nice drop pass that led him to walk right down the middle.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't scoop up a turnover, and that was a really nice play off the rush. But when he's in motion, he's so far less predictable, and he thinks less, and he plays David Pastrnak hockey. You know, when he gets a little stationary, that's when he becomes predictable. But I've seen the subtleties in his game that he's added to his arsenal in order to get better shots from better areas, and people can't block those shots, particularly on a power play, when he's in motion. You know, and he's not posting up on the dot. He's not just kind of standing still on the elbow on either side, depending on how the Bruins decide to attack a certain penalty-killing group. And I think when he's in motion, and he can be in motion and still be predictable, particularly on entries on the power play. You know, when he tries to go individual, come on, David, you know, the simple give and go, you are impossible to defend. And when he loses sight of that, you know, he's thinking too much and he tries to get too individualistic. That's when he's very predictable. So I liked what I've seen when he's played his hockey this year. His numbers are still respectable, but he can be such more a dominant player.
Rick, I'm going to ask you an unfair question, and I'll throw out to you too, Razor, as well.
Not a rarity for you, Billy.
Yes, I know. But I'm going to throw it out there because sitting on the bench, I've been on the bench at college, not in the NHL, but I'm going to ask this. When he tries to go commando, when a guy like that is doing too much and it's not working, and it's not just a little bit, but more and more, his teammates get mad at him, you think? Or do you think they get there's mad, there's frustrated, or do they get quiet? Because I got a hunch that Butch and the assistants more than, you know, give it to him. But what about the teammate? What do you think about that?
Yeah, in my experience, it gets quiet. Okay, it gets quiet on the bench, and the best results that I ever saw from my playing days is when a coach would tell a player, the player that Pasta most respects, to remind him that that's the wrong play. The better play would be to do this. And I think that message gets received a lot more welcoming than, you know, players getting mad, angry, yelling, or a coach, you know, doing the same. And if it comes from a peer and somebody that's well-respected and he gets reminded or say, hey, you might want to try this next, however the message is delivered, but it comes from a teammate and a respected teammate, you get your best results.
Razor, your experience, you know, when a star player is struggling and then tries to do too much. I mean, I'm going to guess each individual's personality probably plays a factor too.
It does. I think in David's case, to Brick's point, he's not the old veteran star. The Patrice Bergeron probably doesn't need a word. He's just going to figure that out himself. I think David is still in that secondary level where we can see him do too much and he can hear that from a veteran voice. So in Toronto, if Mats Sundin was doing too much, there really wasn't anybody who was going to say anything to Mats at that point. He'd already got his 500 goals and his 1500 points. However, a young Mats Sundin with a Joe Sakic and a Wendell Clark in Quebec probably had someone say something to him. So I think there's also, so where David is, it gets quiet. Mm-hmm. Guys probably get a little frustrated. Maybe someone who wants to be on the first power play unit, who isn't, could possibly be a little annoyed, a little frustrated, and maybe do the same thing when he gets out there for his 22 seconds at the end of the power play when everyone's not into it anymore. But It can have effect. It can have a bit of an effect, and it comes down to David figuring it out.
Yeah, not to belabor the point, fellas, but along those lines, Ray, you know, you play with a guy like Ray Bourque, you know, and how do you send the message to Ray? Because Ray wanted the puck every time he was on the ice, or every minute he was on the ice, at least be involved, right?
And that was 39 minutes a game.
Exactly. You know, and you get out there for a power play, and sometimes, you know, teams would overplay him. You know, they'd almost play you 4-on-3 and just have a guy, like, make sure Ray doesn't beat you on the power play, right? So you had to get, once in a while, once in a great while, you just had to have a power play meeting with the coach and have the discussion as a group and say, you know, not every play has to go through you, Ray. We got some other pretty good players on this team. You know, there's a guy named, you know, number 8 that's pretty good on the slot. Maybe we can find him in the bumper, our version of the bumper, right? You know? So, Billy, those are unfair questions. No, but they're difficult questions when you start dealing with star players and how do you get the message and who best to deliver it.
I need one of those meetings with them for the alumni games. All, I have to feed him all the time. He gets mad at me if I don't pass it to him still.
Oh, we all know players like that. I love that. But it's great that, you know, but, you know, there's a burden, too, of being a star like that, too, right? I mean, that type of player, I can only imagine the confidence of players like that at the highest level in the NHL and how much they need it, how badly they want it, and how much they need it. I will never question David's desire to be one of the guys, one of the great goal scorers in the National Hockey League. But I will question his execution at times.
And that's the admiration that we have for a guy like Pastrnak, along with his line mates, is that even when it's not going well, they got their legs over the boards at crunch time, and that they want to be right back out there, and they're going to be difference makers, and they want that responsibility and that pressure. And he's one of those guys that has developed that kind of attitude. And I know it comes from Bergeron. I know it comes from Marchand. It comes from that leadership group. But he is willing to accept it, and he's embraced it, and he's improved at it. It's not perfect, but he's improved that.
Yes. Yeah, he has. Razor, I'll start with you on this one. A lot of off-season acquisitions. I called it the unknown concoction, right? Remember when we talked about it? Is it going to be one of those unbelievable tasting concoctions that your little kid makes and says, "Daddy, try it," or is it going to be one that you just, you know, you got to get rid of? All the free agent signings in the off-season, 26 games in. A better signing, Linus Ullmark or Tomáš Nosek? Because those two would be at the top of my list for top signings. Which one of those two, and I'll give Brick the extra 30 seconds to think about his answer there. What do you think, Razor? Better signing between those two?
Well, I do really like Tomáš Nosek, but the goaltending position is always most important. I look at the way this team hasn't been perfect through 26 games, like we've seen them through 26 games in prior seasons, and use that as a reason why Linus Ullmark's even been more important. Because if you had two rookie goaltenders through these 26 games trying to go through this, I think we've seen the highs and lows of a Jeremy Swayman game to game just recently, as easy as Nashville to the New York Rangers two nights later. It's hard as that rookie, and then he bounces back because he gets 6 days off because Linus Ullmark goes in and gets a good win against Vancouver and a tough loss in his respect to Detroit, just giving up two goals. He's been there to be able to help Jeremy's development. So in all of those, I like Nosek's game, but just because the goaltending position is more important than what Tomas brings.
You agree, Brick?
I do, but I'm still stuck on that concoction thing you were talking about. I was thinking about a frat party in Michigan.
You know, I first used the concoction analogy on terrestrial radio, so I guess I wanted to keep it kind of clean. But you're right. I was never in a frat at Michigan, but the hockey team, you're right. We had some concoctions. In fact, rookie night is coming back to mind right now, and it's not a pleasant experience.
I had my own philosophy. I had my own philosophy about not joining frats at UNH. I felt like going to every party and not just my own frat party.
I'm with you. We had an open invitation to everyone. It was outstanding. More importantly than that, I had more important invitation for sorority parties. That was even more important.
Yeah. but back to the answer to the question or an opinion as to more important, and definitely the goaltending, no question about it, especially given, you know, that you were coming in with two new guys relative to what had been in the Bruins net over the last decade, or, you know, at least you had one constant in there, Tuukka. But the Bruins obviously made an evaluation on a player that was playing in Buffalo. They made a determination that this guy was worth X amount of years at X amount of dollars. They believed in him. It sure didn't look like he was going to live up to that contract in training camp, but he's gotten better the deeper we've gotten into the season. Thought he played his best hockey of this short season in the last two games on that road trip out west, which gave you a lot of believability about this team, given how shorthanded they were and the key players that they were missing. They went out there, surprised all of us, except for maybe Sophia, because they took 5 out of 6 points. And that gave you a lot of believability in this team, that they play the game the right way. They believe in the system. They might bend, but they won't break. you know, and then they have a performance like they did against Vegas. They play a horrendous opening 15 minutes against the Islanders. Lack of focus. You're supposed to be professionals. And then, you know, you live day to day with these guys, and now you're feeling like, oh, what is this team? What are they? Are they any good? Are they a 500 team? Are they middling? When they get their guys back, are they really that good? Are they just relying on one line and a productive power play? And is their goaltending really, really playoff material? It, you know, it makes you question the team when you live with this team day to day. You try to see the big picture. You try to believe that Ullmark is the guy, but no question, because of the position he plays and the investment they made in this player, that is probably the most important signing of the free agents. You know, we sat around in the summer and we talked about, is David Krejci coming back? And do they have, if you were to shorten your bench, the Boston Bruins, you know, in a game like the old days, and you just played three or four defensemen for the final 40 minutes, you know, who would those top four defensemen be for the Bruins? And if you asked yourself that question before the season began, I think we were looking for the Bruins to maybe, either through the trade market or a free agent signing, to add a top four defenseman, let alone, do you believe David Krejci is coming back, and do you have a sentiment? I know you're paying Charlie Coyle almost like a number two sentiment in terms of contract salary, but is he a true number two sentiment? And those were the questions coming into the year. The Bruins went out, they spent money in free agency. They had some needs. They addressed their needs. They wanted to strengthen their bottom six in order to be a better team. Totally understand that philosophy. But I think right now where the Bruins are relative to a Tampa and a Florida and Toronto, it looks like those two holes are still hurting the Bruins right now.
Yeah, I'd say significantly. You know, we have applauded Charlie Coyle's effort. We said, Razor and I have talked about how he's done some really good things, but I don't see him filling number two slot. I think we'd all agree. Again, I don't want to put words in, but three slot is really the best for him. But since the Bruins don't have a three, you know, they don't have a number two, he's put into that second slot. And I mean, I'm almost looking at the Bruins right now need to just go to the pairs type of thing and just rotate a third guy with a bunch of different pairs. The problem is, you know, I think Marchand and Bergeron should be together. I think Haula and Coyle should be together. I think Hall and Pastrnak should be together. The problem is there's a big gap in that middle of Hall and Pastrnak right there. And is this the time to finally say, Jack Stanika, to come back the name that you brought up earlier, Razor, here's 10 games. Maybe 10 games is the wrong amount. 5 games, whatever it is. Here you go. You're going to put your butt in the middle of these two guys, and we're going to find out right now. Because I just think if they keep putting the top guys together, and I understand why coaching staffs go to it, it's comforting. It gives you at least one of the most dynamic lines in the league and everything. But I think this team needs to get the pairs to strengthen their bottom, their lines, Brick and Razor, throughout their lineup. I'm just seeing too much of a gap between the second and third line. I just am right now with the way that they're constructed.
Well, you're talking about putting Stanika between Hall and Pastrnak in that formula,
maybe,
Billy?
Maybe. I mean, unless
it sounds to me like if you're going to give him a 10-game, you know, yep, trial run and live with whatever he gives you for those 10 games, now you're taking what is supposed to be two of your top three goal scorers and you're giving them a total unknown, unproven in the middle in order to keep your other two pairs together. I'm not ready to do that because I'm too behind in the standings right now. I know this game's in hand, but I need points coming out of this pause, mm-hmm, and I'm not prepared to do that right now.
So, all right. So then, I mean, is Tomáš Nosek, is that playing too far up a lineup if you put him in there, in between those guys? Again, I'm looking for some more depth and some more balance and some more opportunity. Maybe a guy like Smith gets hot with Bergeron and Marchand. And, you know, with Coyle and Haula seem to have pretty good chemistry, and I like Haula better on wing than I do at center. Can you find somebody to ride shotgun there to get them going? I don't know. I feel like they need a way to find some more balance, Razor, up top.
Well, and again, that's for me, the frustrating part is no one is – if we're talking about this 26 game in, there's a massive opportunity, and no one's jumped on it. No one's taken it, and you take it by playing really well on the fourth line, and then you play really well on the third line, and then you get an opportunity on the first power play unit, or then you get a, and that's how careers start, and that's how guys like Marchessault in Las Vegas end up scoring 25, 30 goals a year. That guy was in the minor, buried in the minors, but he finds Alex Burrows, the guy I played with, that's like, and that's what, and it not just this year, to Brick's point, really early in the podcast, there's been years of this, and that's what's lacking right now, that no one is able to take that opportunity. And when you're trying to form it and trying to force it, typically you don't get the results.
I don't know when the deal's coming or if it's coming, but if you're going to trade Jake DeBrusque, Billy, are we talking about, well, he alone is not going to fetch you what you're probably looking for.
No.
If you're looking for center depth and somebody that can play inside your top six, right? So now you're talking a package deal, I assume.
Absolutely.
All right. So where do we go from there? Because, you know, it's imminent. I don't know when it's going to happen, but you know, I think the Bruins are going to honor the request at some point. And in the meantime, maybe you have to pull Haller off the wing with Coyle and put him in the middle. It wasn't a good start for him playing in the center position, but I think he's got a higher level of confidence in his own ability to play the game right now. And maybe you get him in the middle in order to keep Noshik as your fourth line center, because that was your goal, to strengthen lines three and four. And now I don't have to put Stadnik in a situation where he's trying to play with Hall and Pasternak, because I don't see that having immediate results, to be honest with you. Okay. So it just begs the question, you got to deal from a position of balance, not necessarily strength or weakness, but understand what Jake DeBrusque is, what's his value to other teams, but he alone isn't going to get you what you need to help your team this year if that's what you're trying to do. So now you're talking about adding pieces in order to make, you know, a multiplayer trade.
Yep. And I've said on this show, you have an opportunity to change the DNA of this team with the DeBrusque deal, but it's going to take creativity from Don Sweeney, and it's going to take a bigger deal. And I think they have to do it. I think the DeBrusque trade may end up being very telling as to where this Bruin team ends up going this season, guys. I do.
Do you guys think with this, the outbreak, the pauses, is that going to trigger GMs to get moving on this, or is this going to really dry things up in more of a trade deadline way? Do they have anyone to dance with because of all that's going on right now?
Well, I definitely think it leads to much more conversation. You know, there's more time in the day. Yeah, more time in the day. I mean, all you're doing is sitting around and waiting for test results and where's the league going? You know, you have responsibilities. GM's responsibilities are limitless. Yeah. But no, I think it opens up much more time and much more opportunity for conversations to really, really, you know, peel the onion on who's really interested in my player and what's available to me based on what I need in my roster.
Well, it'd be interesting to see the NHL trade freeze. I don't know what the date is today. I'm so bad at this stuff.
19th, Billy. 19th. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, again, I'm 1.5 in.
Well, the 20th, so, you know, if it's the morning brew. The 20th.
Yeah.
It's the morning
brew. I think, isn't it the trade freeze now? Through the 27th or 29th or something, like there's an NHL trade freeze. So it looks to me like it will come after if it happens, but it's going to be.
I don't expect a trade now, but the conversations, there's no freeze on conversations.
Exactly. So, right. I mean, I've got a ton of other stuff that I'd love to get to, but you know what, with Brick, and we already exceeded what we thought we'd go with Brick. So I apologize on that, but your room, Brick, looks so fantastic. I'm sure you've got nothing but time to sit and talk Bruins and stuff with us. We had a bunch of listeners.
Come on over for a little eggnog. Both you guys.
I tell you what, got nothing going right now. Youth hockey. That's it, Brick. I'll be over. Let's take some. I want to take some of these questions that we got in from a lot of people that responded to our request, and I'm just going to rifle through some, and let's just, you know, have fun with them. Get there, and there's some quick, there's some great, and there were some not so good. So I'm not going to use the not so good ones. This one comes from a McAvoy fan club who goes by the name Ant. Could Connor Clifton be more of a forward, or could he move forward than a D? His aggressiveness and on the fly style seems like he'd be a good forechecker and maybe cause some havoc in the ozone. They believe they'd play there a little bit in Providence. One of you got Brick. Could he move up? Would it even be something viable? Would you even want to see that?
He could. I mean, he'd be capable. I mean, it's a lot harder to go the other direction, right? Try to be a right wing and go back and play defense in the NHL. Yeah. I think he'd be fine. But, you know, he'd be a bottom six player, and it would not improve your roster.
That would be a desperate measure.
Yes, I would agree. Both of you here, and this is from numerous people who have similar questions. Yes or no, let's just do the NHL players end up pulling out of the Olympics? I have multiple here. The one I'm looking at right now is from Rob Couture. Razor, we'll start with you. Do you think they pull out of the Olympics?
They're not going to the Olympics, no.
Okay. Brick, what do you think?
I say no as well.
I'm with you guys, too. Make it 3 for 3. I think they call that a trifecta.
Ovi might go. Ovi still might go, but the rest of the league isn't.
Ovi, I mean, even a guy like Stamkos wants to go, right, Razor?
Yeah, Stammer. I mean, Sid the Kid doesn't ever turn Team Canada down.
So yeah, but a guy like Stamkos, who has never played in the Olympics, yep, correct?
And this was going to be it. He's not playing 4 years from now. There's a lot of those stories, and that's why they've been trying to hang on to this Olympic dream, because it's a really big deal. It's a really, really big deal.
If there was any way you could eliminate the possibility that even if you had a positive COVID test in China, but you didn't have to stay there in quarantine, you could come back to North America in quarantine, would that affect their decision to go to the Olympics?
I think guys would have went either way. I think now, because of what's going on with the league and the games they have to get in, I think it's just going to be a collective realization that they can't go. I think it's more along that. I think if it came down to it, players would still vote to go. If this had not happened, I think there would be a lot of guys that would win. There's a lot of guys disappointed that they can't go.
But even if they could come back and quarantine here, but let's say they quarantined and it was 2 weeks and they didn't get paid for those because it's in the NHL, you know, the rules, you think they'd still go, Razor? Guys would give up that amount of money to go to the Olympics, missing at least one, maybe two paychecks?
Steve Stamkos would. Yeah, guys would. I mean, if you're a Canadian hockey player, I mean, all the guys that go to the Olympics aren't worried about a 2 week paycheck, right? I mean,
yeah, and first timers would go for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you might not get a couple guys, but I think the majority of guys, you know, the 25-year-old goaltender who's playing really well, who doesn't know if he's going to be playing well when he's 29. Can always say he's an Olympian.
I think about, not to belabor, but 250 people going to the Olympics. Is that a fair number? Someone's going to test positive.
10 teams, yeah.
Someone's going to test positive over there. It's going to happen. So that's why I bring up the question. If there was a way they could eliminate that possibility, I think the idea of going becomes a lot more attractive.
Here's one from @Nico. Wandamus, @JuanNico is his name, or @NicoWandamus. He asks, are the Bruins a soft team, or is this just the nature of the modern NHL? Or does it have to do something with the player style of, he throws up the names Cassidy, Neely, and Sweeney. I'm assuming it's a he, Juan, so forgive me if not. But so the NHL no doubt has changed, guys. There's no doubt the style. Brick, from the Razor, same thing from when you play, when you are young. This has changed significantly. I don't think the Bruins have enough physical presence, especially on their back end. Razor, I've been saying it since the beginning of this season, that I feel that this is going to be something. We saw it in the playoffs the last couple of years, that overall, but I watch them now more, and I don't think they can handle the wherewithal of even a physical game, numerous physical games in the regular season, Brick and Razor. So I do think that they need to get stronger. I do. Is that, you guys agree, disagree?
Yeah, Yeah, I wouldn't put them in the soft category. They're certainly not a physical team. They're not a heavy team. They don't get into those two categories, certainly. They're somewhere right in the middle. You know, do you wish that they were a little meaner around the front of their own net? You wish that they could really push people out so their goaltenders could see pucks and control rebounds much easier than they do? Absolutely. Would you see fewer flybys on the forecheck? Absolutely. But, you know, that's not the nature of their team. But I don't think they're soft. I think they have strength in numbers, and they try to look after one another and have each other's backs and try to play the game the right way. But you know what Boston fans appreciate? They appreciate that lunch pail, the physicality, the heavy guys. They think about that 2011 team a lot, even though we're a decade beyond, because that's the type of team that they liked, that was physical, that was heavy and skilled. Those are tough teams to build. Right now, Boston is not that kind of team, but soft. That has such a negative connotation, and I wouldn't go there.
It's a dirty word, the S word.
It is a dirty word. It's a really dirty word.
In a locker room, it is a dirty, dirty word, except when you say a guy's got soft hands. That's the only time the use of soft razor is good.
Yeah, and I'm assuming the question isn't meaning to go that far. I typically lean towards just the way the game's played, as much as anything, and I think they need to be heavier. You look at that Vegas team that just came through, and how big, Vegas with the, that is a big, heavy squad that doesn't necessarily play physical either. They don't have Ryan Reeves there anymore. But they're just hard to play against. So I think there could be a little bit more of that. But I think the league has just gone to a place where it's speed, speed, speed. Trevor Zegras passes behind. That's where it keeps going, and I think the Bruins have had their eye on that for a few years now.
Yeah, but back to your point, Billy, on the back end, and I always look at Tampa, okay? You know, back-to-back cup winners. Look at the size and skill, you know, and ability. And again, the point I made earlier in the conversation about limiting your D to four players. You can roll out, all right? Hedman, McDonough, Sergachev, Chernak. That's your four. Not one of them is, under 6'2", 210 pounds. And their skill, that would be ideal.
Yeah, that would be very nice. And the Bruins definitely need some of that. A couple of more here. We had numerous inquiries or submissions that involved this same topic. So I'm just picking out one here. This is from Joey Hurley, 69, Joseph Hurley. He asked sincerely, is Bruce Cassidy on the hot seat more so than the front office? We've had Rick Razor, numerous questions that came in about changes and locker room, and there's been reports of this and that. I do not think Butch is on the hot seat. I'll start. I don't think he is right now. Now, with that said, I think everybody, and Cam's used these words before last year, everybody, everything's being viewed, and I think this is a year where everything is going to be visited again, everything meaning front office, management, coaching, et cetera. But right now, I don't think Bruce is. I think they're trying to figure out what they do with this team, especially with regard to Jake DeBrusque. Of course, COVID, but let's move past the COVID. That's the number one thing. But what are they going to be? They have to make a move for Jake DeBrusque. I don't think right now he is, but I do think it's pretty obvious, right, guys? Everything that happens by the end of this season, I think everything's going to be reviewed.
Well, I think the topic comes up for a number of reasons, Billy, and I can appreciate the sentiment from, what did you say his name was, Joe Hurley?
Yeah.
I can understand that, because it's really about wins and losses and how does the team and the players feel about their coach? What's that relationship? But first and foremost, first of all, the guy wins. He's win. Cassidy's won a lot of games. I know that hasn't gotten to the ultimate prize, but, playoffs every year, the winning percentage is excellent. I think his ability to coach is very good. But you look around the league and you see coaching changes for a variety of reasons, right? Started with Quenneville. I mean, all the way to Paul Maurice stepping down. I mean, that caught everybody by surprise, I believe. Mm-hmm. Bruce Boudreau goes into Vancouver. Those guys can't lose. So it starts to think. And then you add to that, I know there's been some inertia about Bruce's want at times to call his players out publicly. I guess that seems to be a sore spot for some portion of the fan base. And I get that. I understand where that sentiment comes from. But the seat, I don't even think is warm right now, but I understand why the topic comes up, because the team isn't performing up to its capabilities, and that always points a finger at the coach.
Yeah, I mean, Razor coaches, you're hired, not hired to be fired. I know that's the old saying, but
you're hired to be.
It's part of
it. Yeah, of course. It's not. If you have a run and you can be somewhere for 5, 6, 7, 9 years, then you're way ahead of the game. But I don't think we're anywhere near that point with this organization. I think to Brick's point, it just kind of feels like a perfect storm to talk. I bet every fan base, other than the top two teams in each division, are talking about, well, maybe we could fire our coach and rattle off 7 wins in a row. And that's a nice idea to have. It doesn't always work that way. And GMs and front offices don't. It's a long game when you're doing this. So, well, you have Montreal, you have Vancouver, you have these big name, big franchises doing it. I think it just brings it all to the surface a little bit more. Also, you also had a Backes interview where he's criticized how he was treated on the way out. That also gets spread on social media, and it's easy to go right from that article to Patrice Bergeron doesn't like him. And then fire that out. So I think it's just a lot of perfect storm, like Brick said. And there's no change. There aren't any changes being made in this team. They think they're going to make the playoffs and go on a run. That's what they think they're going to do. And they're going to have to try and figure it out.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I don't see anything happening right now there. Last one. Hi, my name is Liam, also known as Nucky McAvoy. What is your favorite Christmas gift that you ever got as a young hockey player? I don't know. You got. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot. It can be hard to remember.
Oh, that's easy. That is easy.
Yeah, I got it too.
That is easy for me. Okay. Really. All right. So you know, I'm one of seven. Okay, one of seven children. I had four brothers, all athletes, all hockey players. You know, when the Bruins were winning the Cup in 1970 and 1972, I was 8 and 10 years old. And every one of my brothers and myself, we dreamed about being a professional hockey player and playing for the Boston Bruins. Now, I had three older brothers, so you can only imagine the hand-me-downs that I got, you know, not once used, not twice used, three times used before they got to me. But one winter, when I get up and I race to the Christmas tree, and I saw under the tree with the name tag on it with my name, and it was a brand new Lie 5. Perfect left hook Montreal surprise hockey stick. Awesome. Awesome. And you know what? It lasted one game. and not because it broke in the game. I played one game with it, and I went to the second game, and I was taking it out of the back of the station wagon. I didn't have the stick fully out before I slammed the door shut.
How pissed was Santa?
Oh, man.
Hey, how old were you then?
I never got another new stick after that.
how old were you?
I was 9 years old, right in between the two Cup years.
What a heartbreak that was for that nine-year-old Brick.
That should be, if I would think that could be tear-inducing. I mean, a stick like that?
I'm watering right now.
All right, Razor, you?
Oh, that is so good. No, for sure, it was my parents wrapped up a glove and blocker. I was using town gear. I had all the rental stuff, and they were trying to not allow me to play goal, I think, just trying to work me out. So I had not my own gear. They didn't get that. And they put it in a box. And I remember there was three bricks in it. So it was really heavy. And my mom fooled me the whole thing, opened it up. Forrester glove and blocker, an old Canadian company. And I remember they were white and red and yellow. They were the same colors of my town, the whole thing. So that's certainly, I never forget that one. And they didn't get slammed in the, I probably had to use those for 9 years.
A lot of saves in those, right?
Lots of saves. Yes, that's right.
Oh, that's great. I was a young kid, and for Hanukkah, I got, and I don't remember what age, my grandmother from Boston, my Nana, who grew up in Winthrop and then lived on Beacon Street, downtown. I remember I saw these hockey sheets in the pro shop. Remember when every rink had a pro shop, unlike now, you know, where it's just a few, but every rink had a pro shop. And this had every team's logo, including, I think it had the California Golden Seals on it. So I'm guessing it was probably a let's move it type thing, because I couldn't have been more than five. So California was maybe getting out of the league, or it was a fire sale type of thing. All I know is that she got them for me. And, you know, it was one, a gift that I got, and it was, this is part of your Hanukkah. And oh my God, I think I used them until I was like 15 or 16 years old on a toy. But these sheets with every team's logo on it. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. And it was, I never forget it. I love those sheets. I still love those sheets. In fact, we found some for my son, Jake, different, but still with teams on it. And I was like jealous. My wife wouldn't go for it though. And I don't know if they came in king size, but everything right there. All right. This is great stuff, guys. And we're going to wrap it up here. Ton of other things that we could get to. Hopefully, Brick, we can get you on another time. And you know what? We are giving you a Morning Brew mug that you will thoroughly enjoy with your daily coffee. And you have more than one coffee, my friend. So I know that you'll
I'm
have
a
that.
Big morning coffee guy with the newspaper. Absolutely. I appreciate the gift.
But
thank
we
you.
We will hit you up on a night where we do Morning Brew in the evening with Evening Brews. And we will get you your
even
your
better.
Your choice of beverage there as well. And we'll just continue to talk hockey. Listen, not to get whatever here, but if this is our last show before Christmas, we haven't decided yet, please, everybody, stay as safe as possible out there, as healthy as possible out there. Razor and I might try and come back if some news comes out in the meantime before we go on a 3 or 4 day hiatus. And if not, we'll social media you up and we'll let you know when we're coming back. Rick, a lot of fun having you join us in this one.
Yeah, I had a great time, and keep me in the loop if you guys find out some information before I do. And Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy holidays, and I hope to see you guys at the rink soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. Razor, you and I, again, will be in touch with everybody. And in the meantime, everybody, be safe, be smart, be healthy out there. We appreciate all of your support. Thanks again to Apex Entertainment for bringing you this show. And as always, everybody, have a great day, but more importantly, enjoy that fresh cup of coffee.